bills that aren't going to get heard today. So, you can take off your list 790, 717, 2148A, and 2967.
I don't even have that list.
Well, I think they revised the work session list, Senator. I can show you mine. Just show them mine. Gee, I thought the crowd would empty out, but no.
Oh, okay.
So, basically, those bills are on life support systems right now because of a little difficulty in the leadership. I'll leave it at that.
Is that the word for the day?
The fugly, yes.
It's easier to spell than fubar.
But it has the same value.
Yeah. Okay, let's... Let's get going then. Let's do 3020. There's nothing else that we have. You're not ready yet.
Oh, when do you have to leave, John?
4:05. But I can be back at 4.
Okay, but so we should do 3020 right away then.
Okay. Open up a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3020. A, engrossed.
Okay, let me give you a minute.
Okay, great. We have Mr. Hendricks here. Thank goodness. Welcome, Mr. Hendricks.
They're still hot.
They're still hot. Hot off the press. Okay. Dash 11s and dash 13s. I think what I'll do is... Ms. Darby has a fairly simple one, so the dash 11. So I'm going to let her come up with you right now and present hers. Just stay there, and we'll go from there. Do we have a witness? Go ahead, Ms. Darby.
Thank you, Chuck Corcoran, members of the committee. My name is Beth Ann Darby. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Education Association and members of the PERS Coalition. We are introducing today the A11 amendments that essentially they change current PERS law to allow members that are invested in the variable account to move their money back into the regular account. Currently, PERS administrative rules require members to pass what's called the one-time variable transfer test, which says that if they haven't earned at least what they would have earned in the regular account, then they cannot make that transfer. This would allow them to do the transfer if they are willing to accept the losses that they suffered in the variable, even if they are lower than what they might have earned in the regular account. We have sought input. Well, we just received the amendments a little while ago, but we have circulated them in the back of the room, and I believe that the employers are okay with the amendments as well as First Coalition members.
I'm getting a nod to the affirmative. Okay. And the presumption is that this is, in effect, revenue neutral to the plan because
yes,
it creates a subtraction if there's it needs to be in terms of either under full formula or under, well, you wouldn't be under variable. Okay.
Yeah, this would impact the full formula calculation only because by the nature of it, of money match, that happens already. And yes, Dave Hendricks worked with Steve Delaney of PERS to ensure that they were drafted in a neutral way so that there would not be a cost associated with them.
And Mr. Delaney and Mr. Voigtfeld can verify that? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. So, colleagues, we have the dash 11s and the dash 13s. Why don't we have David explain the dash 13s? And would you, this is a stuff but not a gut, correct?
Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Deputy Legislative Counsel, yes.
Okay, thank you.
The balance of the bill remains in effect under all of these amendments. None of them replace the bill itself. The Dash A13 amendments are a large selection of various changes, many of them driven by the interaction between House Bill 2003 and 2004, both of which passed rather quickly through the process, and afterwards people began to look at how the two were going to fit together and spotted many things that needed to be addressed before we left here this session. In addition, there are several other changes as well that people have come forward with. If you'd like, I can start moving my way through and try to move briskly through them to kind of hit some of the highlights.
And you know what, David? I just noted that Representative Gilman's in the room, and so I don't know what he's here for, but I just let me give him the courtesy of... are you here on another bill?
Senator, I'm on 2739, third one down.
Okay. We can do one of two things. I can either call you or I can let you do it right now. Which would you rather do?
You can call me.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Representative. I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
As I was saying, Chair Corcoran, if you'd like, I can kind of go through and hit the high points. Since there are several different things in here, it's hard to categorize what all the different changes do.
What's your pleasure?
Just a bullet point. Boom, boom, boom.
Okay. We'll try to hit them.
I want to really commend Mr. Hendricks once again. I mean, he has been getting input from all sides on 3020 and 2020 and keeps holding it together, and he hasn't had to increase his medication yet.
No. And no one's indicated that I should, so that's good too.
Well,
and that's my only feedback, you know.
Privately speaking, Mr. Hendricks.
I'll just go through quickly on some of the changes that we made and give you a flavor of what the issues that came up were. A lot of these had to do with looking at the effect of 2003-2004. Just skimming down through, in looking at, for instance, the fact that there weren't going to be employee contributions anymore. People wanted to make it clear that that didn't affect unit purchases for police and fire or purchases for creditable service that people could make. That first section accomplishes that. There were various changes with respect to 238-255, which is an important statute because it addresses the deficit account and the 8% guarantee. PERS board wanted to make sure that it was clear what would happen in years in which the board experienced a loss. There's language been added to clarify that. Several of the changes were to eliminate the application of the changes made by 2003 and 2004 to judges. For instance, on page 4, line 11, there was a provision put in to indicate that the limit on the earnings was put in by 2003 does not apply to judges, which means that judge member accounts will continue to earn 8%, the 8% that's guaranteed under the existing law. There has to be a judge member who is a member of the system on June 30th, 2003, so new judges would be phased out from the application of that provision. Generally, the member account of judges doesn't make any difference, but there are some judges for whom it does make a difference because their account balances are so large that it's worthwhile for them to take up their account balance rather than to take the benefit provided by the formula provided in the statute. The changes made in Section 11 are really fairly technical changes with respect to certain members who retire underneath an installment basis. I'm not going to get into the details of that. Section 12, which is on page 5, there's two things that we were doing in there. This is the minimum account balance guarantee of 2003, where we said a person will get at least what their account would have earned if it was credited with the assumed interest rate in all the years in which they were working. We made two changes. We covered alternate payees who are spouses underneath the divorce decree. The other thing we did was make a clear statement about where the money was going to come from to pay this guaranteed amount, this guarantee we now have in of a minimum account balance. And we made it clear that if if there wasn't, if the board was required to do this, it was going to be charged back to that deficit account we already have now for the 8% guarantee. So there's now a clear statement of PERS about what to do and where the money's to come from, because that was an open question under the minimum account balance provision of 2003. One important change that was made in the in section 10, I'm looking on page 6 now, this was section 10 of 2003. This was the one that basically was designed to recover the 20% distribution that was made in 1999, and basically it said that there won't be any COLAs payable to members until such time as basically they've earned back the difference between that 20% and 11.33. There was a couple of important little tweaks that needed to be made in there, both to make sure that we caught the right calculation of what the for the purposes of figuring out how to establish the difference between what you would have had with the 11.33 versus the 20%. That appears on page 6. Let's see, what else is important in here? We've indicated the section doesn't apply to judge members. We've indicated that they do apply to alternate payees and beneficiaries. I'm sorry, this is not a good bullet, I grant you. It's kind of hard with this thing to be able to do it. I guess I'd categorize, let me categorize the types of changes that would be helpful. We made changes for the state treasurer to make it more consistent with how they understood these, the monies in the transition accounts that we created in 2003 created these transition accounts where the old 6% employee contribution will now go into these transition accounts. State Treasury wanted to have it clear exactly what the rules were going to be, how that was going to be invested. We made several changes in the statute to account for that. We made several changes for purposes of issues relating to the judicial review provisions. The judicial review provisions of 2003 and 2004 were different. They are now the same. We have various miscellaneous things that appear at the end of these amendments, that some of which are just are not related to 2003, 2004 at all. For instance, Section 23, we had previously passed out Senate Bill 258, which was the one that allowed inactive members to withdraw 150% of their account to encourage them to take their money out. It was pointed out that alternate payees should be able to do that as well, and we've now amended it to make clear that that could happen. In sections 24 through 26, this was a request that came from the governor's office, and it removes the requirement right now. After we passed 2005, which was the bill relating to the makeup of the PERS board, there was a provision that said that one of the members had to be a member of the PERS board. The governor's office wanted to hold that off for 4 years. These amendments say that that requirement doesn't apply for at least the next 4 years. In 2006, you will need to have a member who is appointed who is a member of the PERS board. There's one small one at the very end that is would be easy to miss. Section 32, that repeals the sunset on a law passed in 2001 that had to do with certain judges' benefits, retired judges' benefits, that would have allowed them to continue underneath the health policies they had while they were still non-retired, this, and also to have the state contribute towards the cost of that insurance, and this allowed this to be permanent.
Well, we're going to get those bills one way or the other. They're going there. Okay, thank you.
And with that, I'll shut up.
Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. Any questions? Excellent.
About WIC. What other ones? The Dash 11s?
Oh, Dash 6 amendments, do you have those in front of you?
I do. The dash six amendments will require, there are certain public employee retirement systems that are not in the PERS. Certain public employers are not required to have, most public employers are required to use PERS for their police and fire officers. The only exception is for certain public employers who can establish that they have systems that were not brought into PERS, but they have to provide benefits that are equal to or better than the benefits provided by PERS. PERS currently looks at those other systems from time to time to determine whether they still meet that test, equal to or better. These amendments will require PERS to do that review once every 2 years.
Okay. So we're going to do... We're going to do the 13s, 11s, and 6s at this point. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And the dash 7s contain the changes that we had made in Senate Bill 325 and just amend them into... this absent the Umpqua Community College president that is no longer unemployed.
Chair Corcoran, that's correct. There was previously provision for presidents of community college or temporary presidents, and that has been removed. It was a temporary provision for directed at a single person. But otherwise it is 325A as it passed to the House.
Okay. And we're going to probably hear from Grattan on the 8-5 amendments, I would assume. Yeah, why don't you come up now? And Maria wants to testify, okay.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Grattan Cairns representing the Oregon University System. The A5 amendments pertain to the optional retirement program of the Oregon University System. The optional retirement plan, known to us as the ORP, was created by statute in 1995, became effective first in January of 1996. And when it was created, it linked the contribution rate for the ORP to the combination of the contributions to under PERS. What the A5 amendments would do would be to decouple from PERS and give the rate setting authority to the State Board of Higher Education. In addition, it would allow for a reopener for those people who are in PERS and wish to make an irrevocable decision to come over to the ORP could do that. The amendments say that there would be a 180-day period following enactment of the measure. However, in all honesty, I think that really ought to read at the end of the biennium, that would be June 30, 2005, because 180 days would not provide due notice to all the parties, nor would it give them any certainty regarding what the ramifications of any choice might be. The effect of the bill also would have an amendment which allows the Investment Council to give notice to PERS that there would need to be a smoothing out of the withdrawal of the dollars so that they'd be done in no more than 5 annual installments in order not to have a detrimental impact, and that would also be leave the member whose account was transferred would hold them harmless. Those are what the amendments would do. Let me tell you why it is we're advancing them. When we first created the optional retirement program, the idea was to provide for faculty who are a much more mobile force, workforce, to have the option for a portable defined contribution plan. It's part of what we would hope to be a competitive total compensation plan. We don't have one of those today by virtue of the lag in salaries for our teaching faculty, but the attraction of a portable defined benefit optional retirement plan has been significant. Our concern is that we are trying to look in the crystal ball along with everyone else and say what will be the circumstances in 12, 18, or 24 months. And what we're interested in not doing is find ourselves tied to either a rate which is not comparable to what the board would want to have for a competitive optional retirement plan in relationship to a national labor market for faculty, or B, tied to a rate which is no longer operative by virtue of action by this legislature and creation of a successor plan, or B, the result of various legal actions which may happen at some point in the next 2 years. So the object of it is to provide for a decoupling of that rate, allowing the state board to set that rate, and allow for those who are in the subject class to move over if they wished during an open window period.
Great.
Yes, sir.
Does this apply only to faculty?
It applies to everyone outside the classified staff. So it would be all the unclassified, that would be administrative and teaching faculty, research faculty, and others employed who are outside of a bargaining unit. Hmm. Now, the total of the class is around 6,600 employees. That number is going down every day. But
everybody retiring, or
we're doing the same thing everybody else is and trying to soak up as many vacancies and trying to create a smaller workforce. But we've got about 2,100 employees in now. That represents about 30% to a third of the workforce. So the math tells us that about 6,500 would be the total universe.
Okay. I call this, I live in an ivory tower and think I can run my defined contribution plan better than PERS can, amendment.
Well, PERS doesn't run, Mr. Chairman, PERS doesn't run it. It's run by trustees and has four mutual fund and insurance company plans available. So it is, in truth, an optional retirement.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Mr. Nelson, you want to come up on the dash fives? I think we're done with Mr. Hendricks, don't you? Mr. Hendricks? No, I think we covered all the dash. We got the fives, the sixes, the sevens, the 11s, and the 13s before us today. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your good work. Go take your afternoon nap now.
Don't tell him that.
Yeah, the guy. Something out there called the successor plan.
Oh, you mean it? You have other stuff on your desk?
That's where the scotch comes in handy.
Yeah. This poor guy's been getting more advice than Dear Abby. I mean, you know, it's just every time he turns around, somebody's sending him something. So, go ahead, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing Association of Oregon Faculties. Association of Oregon Faculties is an association of faculty members throughout the state system. There are four campuses that are represented, have collective bargaining units. We represent members of those units as well as non-members. It's an association. We are in opposition to these amendments. They were also presented on the House side. The optional retirement system was set up, as Mr. Cairns has said, as an option for people, particularly people who weren't sure they were going to stay in the system. They want a portable type of system. It's set up so that it matches the PERS rate in terms of the contribution, and as that contribution has gone up, so has the contribution for the optional retirement plan, and just as such as the contribution will go down as a result of passage of legislation in this body related to PERS, it will go down. Our main objection to this is the setting of the rate by the State Board of Higher Education. We believe that the rate is set properly in the statute. If it's not proper, then we should address it there. But we don't believe the State Board of Higher Education should be setting the rate. It's similar to, we wouldn't ask the Department of Transportation, that commission, to set the rate as it relates to the those pension systems. More importantly, Mr. Chairman, is we have two faculty that are sitting or in the same offices. We believe that the contribution rate should be the same for a faculty, whether it's in the PERS system or they choose the optional retirement system. We do have a similar desire as to giving the people in the optional retirement system at some point in time an opportunity to decide whether they want to move back and forth in one decision, one option, but we don't believe the 180 days is particularly timely in consideration of everything else that's going on as it relates to the legislation that's passed. So we very much believe that the rate should be as it is in statute, and it will go up and go down as you change legislation, and we don't believe the State Board should be setting that rate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Kilmer? Ms. Ray, did you want to testify?
Let's make her.
Yeah. I don't think you can make Marla Ray do anything. I haven't seen her do anything for 9 years. Go ahead.
I'd be happy to have her join me. Maria Keltner, I'm representing the League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties. I just wanted to put on the record to let you know, in terms of House Bill 3020, the -A6 amendments, which deal with the greater than or equal to local plan testing, that it will increase the cost to those employers who have local equal to or greater than plans, because they are charged for the actuarial cost of having those reviews done. The current system, whenever there's an increase in PERS benefits that's substantial, I believe is the language, or a decrease in the local plan benefits that's substantial, then a test is done. The amendments would require a review every 2 years, regardless of whether there had been any change in either plan. So it's that additional cost that is the concern that I'm just pointing out to you. It affects, last count, about 10 entities, 5 cities, Forest Grove, Portland, Seaside, Springfield, and the Dalles all have local greater than or equal to plans, and 4 counties, Morrow, Tillamook, Union, and Wheeler, and then there is a special district, Mid-Columbia Fire and Rescue, that has a local plan, according to the last information from PERS. So we're just opposing the charge every 2 years, particularly when there's been no change. PERS is planning to do a full actuarial comparison after the legislation is completed in this session, to start sometime in January or after January of 2004. So thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Absolutely. You talked about my senator's favorite amendment there.
Mr. Chairman, listen, just
yes, Senator,
a little hint here. It has been a long time since the PERS Board has done an evaluation of the equal to or better than category. There have been people during the last legislative assembly that attempted to get PERS to actually do it. And for whatever reason, cities who were in this category resisted that from happening. And just to give you an example, say for the public record, because it is public record, when I retire in December from the Portland Police Bureau, my pension's about $4,500 a month. And I work with detectives in the same office who transferred from the County Sheriff's Department, receiving the same salary. their projected pension benefit is upwards to $11,000 a month. Now, I understand it's not an individual comparison. I've gotten that message. But there are inequities and differences between the two systems. And I'm not asking for more for me because I'm going to be retired. But I think that the problem is that the equal to or better thans, particularly the city of Portland, has gotten away with not having to pay their fair share as far as the contributions are concerned. In fact, there was a time in this body when I did have the opportunity to get the city of Portland into PERS, and that was resisted also. So just, I think what's fair is fair. If you're going to balance the PERS system now, then you ought to balance equal to or better than. And if it goes down, it goes down. If it goes up, it goes up. And that's the way it is.
Okay. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this? Okay, good. I'm going to read into the record. I'm not going to read the entire thing, but I want you to be aware of a memorandum that we will make copies available this is not directly pertinent to 3020, but it's very pertinent to the whole discussion about PERS. Senator Menace requested that Mr. Boitko give us his best estimate of the employer rates as they will be as they relate to the judicial review of recent legislation. There's been a lot of questions asked by local governments, for instance, what to plan on in terms of the rate setting. And Mr. Boitko, in his usual way, managed to give me almost two pages of single-spaced stuff to answer the question. But in short, what he was trying to say is that if the courts overturn any of the pieces of the puzzle, then the employer rates would likely need to rise. The agency would recommend to the PERS board that this increase be instituted on the normal pension plan schedule, which is namely that the necessary increase take effect for all public employees at the beginning of the 05-07 biennium. That is not during the 03-05 biennium. So school boards, you know, the other folks that are looking for some surety about what those rates are going to be, those rates are coming up and coming fairly soon. And June 30th, and those will be your rates for 03-05. And if any part of Mr. Gary will tell you that no part of this will be overturned, but if any part is, then the PERS board will be advised by their staff to look at those changes. And it doesn't prohibit the PERS board. They're not prohibited from changing them, but they're going to recommend, the staff's going to recommend that the board do this in the normal fashion. So I think that takes a lot of disruption out of this process. And Senator Schrader will get this memo as well, because it affects the state budget as well. So, a little huddle here. We'll just stand at ease for a moment, please.
A small one. On the dash.
Senator Menace loves these.
They're permissible when legislative counsel is sitting in front of you saying they're helpful.
They are permissible when Senator Menace says they're permissible.
Mr. Chairman, you do need to suspend the rules in order to do this.
I understand. And which?
The dash A6s. It's a clarification of them.
Wouldn't I know? It would be Senator Menace's that gets conceptually.
That's just Councilman Ryder, right?
Oh, okay.
I don't know much about it.
On page 2, at line 2, we made a form and style change there from shall to may.
Mm-hmm.
And the administrator, Mr. Voitko here, raised questions with me about if that had a substantive effect. And, of course, it was not intended to. It was a form and style change. And after going back and looking at it and talking with my compatriots, we think that we better, instead of saying may, we just say is not. And the question here is when a public employer is required to participate in the public employee's retirement system for its police officers and firefighters, this section says they are not if they provide a equal to or better than plan. And the main right sounds as though there may be discretion out there to say, well, maybe they will be required even though they provide an equal to or better. We think the better solution is to strike may and insert is and then make it clear.
Okay. Senator Menas moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of a
conceptual amendment to,
amendment to A6. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Menas?
What he said.
It will be in the A6s on page 2, line 2. The word may will be struck and is will be put in its place. And you don't have to ask me what is, because I'm not a lawyer. Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none? You don't have a vote.
I realize that. I was thinking that you might want to make the conceptual amendment to strike may insert is and then strike B two words later. So it will read, the public employer is not required.
Okay, the conceptual amendment is conceptually amended to include the word B. Striking the word B.
We already adopted the first conceptual amendment. So
we'll have
second conceptual.
Okay, second conceptual amendment by Senator Menas is page 2 of the dash 6 amendments to 3020, and line 2, the word B will be struck. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Judy Hall, we love you.
That's okay. Legislative Council is present. So are you ready for amendments?
Yes.
Okay. Chairman, I move the adoption of the now amended A6 amendments to House Bill 3020.
Senator Menas moves the A6 amendments. Any objection? So ordered.
Chairman.
Senator Menas moves the A7 amendments. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Menas moves the A11 amendments. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Menas moves the A13 amendments. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Menas?
Move House Bill 3020 as amended before the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Menas moves House Bill 3020 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. 3020 to the floor as amended. I'll carry it. It's the procedural stuff. So. Thank you. Okay. These letters from Mr. Boydko are now available if any of you need those. Let's move to Representative.
I'm going to check in next door.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing and a possible work session on House Bill 2739A. Please come up, Representative Gilman.
It's Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That is an ugly tie, Representative. That is the ugliest tie I've seen all day.
Look at these pigs.
If Colonel Harper had those, they'd have wings on them. Please proceed.
I'm here to talk to you about 2739. It started out a simple bill to change may to shall, and it's gotten a few amendments since then. What it has to do with is surplus lands, and my desire for the state to sell surplus land, return them to the tax rolls, thereby increasing the school support and county supports wherever those lands happen to be. There's several amendments. The dash fours are Senator Menas's amendments. I think they're wonderful. I think they help the bill. And the dash fives are from state lands, and someone here will be here to talk to you about that. So, be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No? I think we're all set. We've been told about the amendments. Oh, put your name on the record. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, too. Representing George Gilman, District 55.
All right. Thank you, Representative. Anybody else willing to? Oh, I've got Jeanette Holman and Doug Tindall. Bring up the faceless bureaucrats.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeanette Holman. I'm the Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands in the Finance and Administration section. I'd like to start by thanking Representative Gilman for submitting the Dash 5 amendments for the division. I believe it's the Dash 5, the short ones. All those amendments do are make this provision on surplus lands consistent with other statutory provisions that deal with disposal of common school fund trust lands and gives some recognition of the trust responsibility of the state land board in whether to dispose of those lands or not. And Representative Gilman was kind enough to allow us to amend the bill to do that. We have looked at the Dash 4 amendments and have no concerns with those.
Okay. You're missing the fives.
I don't have
five. Okay, let me see.
I'll find them.
Okay.
You just brought them.
We
don't have a copy of the Dash 5 amendment.
We're just still looking for
it. I don't either. I just.
There, I see one.
Go ahead, Mr. Tindall.
Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, Doug Tindall, State Maintenance Engineer for the Department of Transportation. ODOT's primary interest in this bill is Section 2, which allows us to exchange our surplus properties for property cash or services. What this does is expands our flexibility a little bit if a developer and a city want to relocate one of our maintenance stations. We've had a couple of opportunities when the city grows up around one of our maintenance stations and they said, gee, we'd like to build you a new maintenance station and move you out of the middle of downtown. It's actually advantageous for us, but because of the way the current law is worded, we're prohibited from doing that. This corrects that problem and would allow us to have that relocation or possibly co-location with other local government entities. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator?
Well, does that mean that you're going to consider selling the solar maintenance station then?
the one we haven't built yet?
I'm really
Chair Corcoran, Senator Starr.
You don't have to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Is there a desk person here? Do you have anything to add to this? Okay, you guys are fine with the bill. Everybody's fine. Everybody's happy. Anybody unhappy? Good. Okay, thank you very much.
Are we in work session?
We are not. I will put this in to close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2739A.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Move the Dash A4 amendments to House Bill 2739.
Senator Starr moves the Dash A4 amendments to 2739. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the Dash A5s.
Senator Starr moves the Dash 5s to amendments to 2739. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 2739 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none, Mr. Grabelli, you call the roll.
Chair Starr.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mitchell.
Aye.
Chair
Corcoran. Aye. Thanks. All right. House Bill 2739 to the floor. Okay.
Sure.
Senator Starr,
okay.
Thanks, Senator. It's yours or mine?
It's yours.
I love paper. Okay. Let's do 2739 goes to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Okay, we will. What do we have to do here, John?
Just a suspension of the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote by which we just passed it.
Considering minutes.
We suspend the rules for the reconsideration of the vote by which we just sent House Bill 2739 to the floor of the Senate.
Senator Menace moves that we suspend the rules for the purpose of reexamining the vote.
Reconsidering
the vote on House Bill 2739. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Menace.
I move that we reconsider the vote by which we pass House Bill 2739 to the floor of the Senate.
Senator Menace moves that we reconsider the vote by which we move Senate House Bill 2739 to the Senate floor. Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I guess you want to. Senator Starr make a motion.
So we will move this bill 2739 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Starr moves this bill to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any objection?
As amended.
As amended. Hearing none. So ordered. And you still have to carry it. Do we have any other legislators here? No. Let's do House Bill 2237. Open a public hearing and possible work session. Would you like to tell us what this bill does, please, Mr. Ellsworth?
Senate Bill 2237 is a bill that we have heard previously, and it limits the authority of the board on the Department of Public Safety standards and training, and advises them to on how they disclose photographs of public safety officers. We have two amendments that we have previously adopted on this measure in a previous work session, the -1 and the -4 amendments. And we have a -5 amendment that we're considering at this time.
Okay, we have Maria Keltner from LGPO Center.
Just a quick question. We also have -4 amendments. We've already previously adopted.
I think we previously
did. We
mm-hmm. did those.
Actually, I can make sure we adopted them.
2237. Ms. Keltner?
Good afternoon, Maria Keltner again, representing the League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties. Speaking on the -A5 amendments to House Bill 2237, believe we testified previously in opposition to Senate Bill 445 and 446, which are essentially what the -A5 amendments are. Still have the same position. And thank you for allowing us to testify.
Thank you very much. Get my file straightened out here. Okay, so we are at, we want the
work
dash, we are in a work session, and we want the -5 amendments to 2237. Senator Menace?
If we're in a work session, which I believe you proclaimed we were, I would move the adoption of the -5 amendment.
Well, just to make sure, I'll close the... I'm pretty sure I said work session. Close the public hearing, open work session on House Bill 2237.
Now I'll move the adoption of the A5 amendment.
Senator Menace moves the A5 amendments to House Bill 2237. And I want to thank Senator Starr for helping us with this. He's... not real happy with the amendments, but has agreed to give us a courtesy because Senator Walker's not here. So I appreciate that.
Just a question.
Yes, Senator.
The what's the status of Senate Bills 445 and 446? Are they in a committee that's closed, or?
They're stuck in House rules.
Okay. But that committee is still open?
Yes.
And we're just doing this for the fun of it?
No, okay.
I think that bill, those bills will move out of those committees.
Well,
we are very hopeful. There are some people in this building, there's a whole caucus of people in this building that are very hopeful that they will see the light over on the other side of the building.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I would just suggest that the forces of darkness came out on the House side and had created all kinds of controversy over these innocuous little bills.
Okay.
Okay. Chair, so, you know, I did, the Speaker of the House is aware that this is happening. I did let her know.
She listens to you?
Occasionally.
Yeah. Dang.
It's tough to get her attention these days.
But that's probably true. Okay. Again, you know, I have a few bills that I need some help with. Could you talk to her about those?
I had an appointment before I could get one.
All right. Senator Menace moves the A5 amendments, 2237. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Menace moves House Bill 2237 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Just
Senator Starr?
I will provide a courtesy to move these forward. I supported the other bills as they went through. In fact, carried them. I understand the process that we play. We are in the middle of in this game, or in this body, and understand that sometimes this is necessary. Would prefer to see the original bills move rather than using this technique to get it done. But, so, for the record.
Thank you very much. Ms. Gravel, we call the roll.
Senator Farr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Menace?
Aye.
Chair Corcoran?
Aye. House Bill 2237 to the floor with due pass. You want to carry? Okay, Senator Menace will carry. Thank you very much. We will open a. Have we done a public hearing on 2304 yet? No. We'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2304A. Would you tell us what this does, please? Mr. Ellsworth?
Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, House Bill 2304A, as delivered to us, establishes a state policy for broadband telecommunication services. It requires the Director of the Office of Emergency Management to make rules, to administer the policy, and provide for and staff the Emergency Operations Center to aid the Governor and the Department in performing duties related to Homeland Security protections and emergency communications.
Okay, Mr. Penhollow, can you come up and give us the scoop on this thing?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow with the Association of Oregon Counties. Today I am representing the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, of which I have served as one of the part-time staff members through the interims following the creation of the council by the 2001 Legislative Assembly. Mr. Chair, I have been distributed to you a joint letter from Senator Messerly and Representative Krieger. I thought possibly they were going to be here because their constituent, Ms. Ann Steves, is a member of that council and served on the Public Safety Committee that developed and brought forward this piece of legislation through the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. She resides in Coquitlam and was unable to attend the meeting today. This bill, as your administrator has explained, would provide for a policy, what we feel would be a clarifying policy on the encouraging the state and local governments to work together on emergency preparedness, to make sure that the system that is in place provides the redundancy and the capabilities that is necessary to support emergency services in a time of emergency or disaster. I have attached to the Senator and Representative's letter a copy of the testimony that Ms. Steeves presented to the House earlier in this session. This measure was unanimously passed out of the House committee and passed unanimously in the House, as I recall. I would be happy to answer, attempt to answer any questions that the committee might have. I must admit that this is an area that Ms. Steeves is very much informed in, and I am just more or less the messenger today, but would be happy to try to respond to any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're just going to get Senator Menace back in here and move this puppy out.
Thank you.
Bill 2304A engross to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 2304A engross to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Mr. Cavelli, call the roll.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chairman?
Aye.
Chair
Corcoran? Aye. House Bill 2304 to the floor. I'll carry it since I don't have a clue what it does. Now, I was going to hear Senate Bill 763, but no, I'll open a work public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 763. If you want to leave again, Senator Menace, we can come and get you.
It'll only take a minute, though.
It'll only take a minute.
It should.
I don't know what we have for a witness list.
We've had a previous public hearing, right?
Yes.
No, have we had a public hearing? Okay. No one here to testify. So you want to tell us what the Dash 6s do,
yes.
Senator Starr?
What, if you recall, this is a bill that deals with subregional analysis as it relates to Metro expanding the urban growth boundary. They can identify that we need industrial land, and they can put it all in one end of the Metro boundary and not in the other, or vice versa for housing or whatnot. This would require them. What this does is Metro had gone, if you recall, Metro had gone to the Department of Land Conservation and Development and asked for the authority to do subregional. The DLCD had given them the authority in a rule. What this does is it basically tells DLCD to adopt a rule, which they've already done, but now we give them the statutory authority to do it. And then that's on page 2. And then if you look at page 4, it says that on section 3, it says that they can do it instead of every 5 years, do it every 7 years. And then on page 5, paragraph 4, you'll read there, it basically says that Metro shall consider the subregional. They basically tells them to do the subregional analysis when they expand the urban growth boundary. We've worked with Metro and worked with my local cities in Washington County. We are inches away from having everybody agree to the language. And the agreement at this point is to move this through the Senate and continue to work the issue to get to complete closure, hopefully, on the House side.
Thank you very much. Senator Menace.
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Move the Dash 6 amendment.
Senator Menace moves the Dash 6 amendment to Senate Bill 763. An objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Menace. Move Senate Bill
763 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senate Bill 763 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Mr. Cavelli, call the roll.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chairman?
Aye.
Chair Corcoran?
Aye. And we will have Senator Starr carry it. Thank you, and we are adjourned.